Welcome to Control Talk Now, your smart buildings podcast with Ken Smyers and Eric Stromquist. Control Talk Now, your source for control news you can use. And now, here is Eric.
Welcome to Control Talk Now, the smart buildings video cast for the week ending November 1st. It is Halloween 2015. My name is Eric Stromquist, and we talk about all things smart building and controls. And I got to tell you, who would I be without the man, the myth, the legend, the one, the only, Kenny Smyers from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Kenny, welcome to the show, big dog.
Thanks, Eric. It's going to be a great show, too. We've got an amazing guest that we'll introduce here shortly, and it's kind of a quick week. I think primarily you're going to have to give us the 411 on that LinkSpring exchange and a few other posts, and it's going to be a quick show because we have such a great interview from our guest, today's guest.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait for the guest. So, you know, Kenny, yeah, let's sort of break it down. So a couple of things. At opening, we did promise you the one and only Scott Cross from Temperature Controls out of Dallas, Texas. That was Scott at the Belimo meeting in Aruba. Doing the jetpack, man, that was pretty darn impressive stuff. So we're going to use that sort of as our opener for some of the Belimo videos that we shot down there, which apologize for not getting those up this week, but I do have an interview with Lars Vonderhagen and a couple of the product managers, which we'll be getting up coming up next week. But the reason I wasn't able to do that, Kenny, you're right, I was out in Kansas City at LinkSpring. And checking that out. And I can tell you, the LinkSpring Exchange, Kenny, is something else. A special shout out to some of the great people we saw there. Sean and Steve from Automated Integrated. Man, those are great guys. Of course, Big Poppy was there from Hepta Systems. That's Ted Houck. And I tell you, they got a great, great group of people they work with, Kenny. And, of course, big, big fans of Terry Swope and Mark Petock. Terry, Ken, I tell you, he has been, he's sandbagging us a little bit. He is one of the most accomplished speakers I think I've ever heard. He gave the opening remarks at the LinkSpring event. And I tell you what, he is a fabulous, fabulous speaker. And I think that the sort of the theme of the exchange, it sort of goes hand in glove with what we've been talking about, Kenny. We are in a time of major, major change and revolution, or as we like to call it, renaissance in the building automation controls industry. And I tell you what, Terry and Mark and LinkSpring take that seriously. They have been developing a lot of new products, which we'll get to probably not in this show, but I've got some videos from some interviews, so I'll let them tell you about that. But needless to say, LinkSpring's on the move. And what a great group of people, Kenny. There were probably 200 integrators there, and I mean, I'm talking guys who really know what they're doing. I took a cab over with a guy named Andy Abrams. Andy wanted to say hi to you. I actually didn't have any cash with me. They weren't taking credit cards. And Andy's in Atlanta. He's one of these guys, Kenny. He's been with LinkSpring for a long time, but he's now a one man shop. He sort of comes in behind people and helps them out when they. You know, need some extra help or if they can't get a job fixed. Really, really cool guy. So a shout out to Andy there. But it's a great event, man. And, of course, the Royals won two games while we were out there.
Well, I'll tell you, I was a little bit disappointed I couldn't make it because I love shows where you bring home something. You know, it's time well spent. And I saw that their agenda was just really, really impressive. They had, you know, two tracks. They had, basically a technical track and a business track. And then they also had tremendous support from sponsors. And that's where you really get that collaborative, benefit because LinkSpring introduces new products. And then they've got the supporting cast of sponsors that are bringing you those accessory items that support, you know, whether it's sensors, transmitters, or whatever. So it was really good to see that it was a very successful event. But I saw the value-added applications 1 and 2. I saw lighting controls and retrofits. Lighting is still a very meaningful, easy sponge part of energy savings. And then some of the operational technologies. I know that there was a big presentation on cybersecurity, and I'm anxious to hear about that because I don't think there's anything more important to the HVAC building management and building automation or energy management systems, however you choose to describe how you control the interior and exterior of a building. But cybersecurity just becomes an increasingly increasingly looming event that people don't want to see it happen, but it seems so inevitable. If we can go first, let's just talk about the cybersecurity.
Absolutely, Kenny. Tell me about that. Oh, you want from what we?
Well, I can. I could tell you what the written post was that the Building Automation Networks. Well, first of all, Mark Pitok is probably one of the most recognized members of the industry in terms of how cybersecurity has to be broken down. It's such a large subject. We tend to focus now on operational technologies, building technologies, building automation systems that control things that turn off and on, go up and down, run, start, stop, because that's not IT. IT is data. That's, databases with customer information and very important stuff too, financials. But we're talking about our little networked, our version, our important considerations for cybersecurity, our operational technologies inside and outside of the building. So Mark Pitok being one of the most recognized people in our industry, and Fred Gordy from SmartCore, they're really giving us very important, solid information at a very important time. So I saw that they covered it all, whether it's IT, building automation networks and IT networks should be treated differently. And when it comes to cybersecurity, differently in terms of threat protection. Just like an IT network, building automation network should have a strategy, multiple layers of defense and protection, as well as policies and procedures that are continuously addressed. So I know that was a very good one. What was your, if you had to pick one or two of the most important takeaways from the Linkspring Exchange, what would they be?
Well, I think some of the new products are coming out with Kenny. Again, they're gearing up for the race to the new space. Their Onyx product, which is a really, really cool interface with a nice stack on it, is out. Their CyberPro, we've talked about a good bit, which goes right into what you're talking about with the cybersecurity. They have a real affordable solution that will help there. And their version of Niagara 4, their Jace. They had I think it was Julian or Jonathan Rodriguez from Tritium was there talking about Niagara 4. And the Linkspring version has a couple of nice little wrinkles in it, so good stuff there. But I think it's the new products. It's really the new products, and I think more importantly, Kenny, not more importantly, but equally as important to me, is the fact that these guys, we've talked about it before, but Terry Swope, Bob Mealy, Mark Pitok, and those guys, the values out of that company, Kenny. And how they roll. They are going to take care of their customers. Not that other people don't, but this is just, it permeates with this group of people. And Terry was telling me that, for example, the book Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, it's a course that everybody in their organization goes through. It's a book by Stephen Covey. Fantastic book if you haven't read it. But if you follow those habits, it really gives you a moral compass and an ethical compass. And not only do they teach all their people, Terry puts all his people through that, but their customers get to go through it. It's a big part of their core values. And so I think to me what that means is these are guys, an organization that is just going to be rock solid and steady and people that you can count on. And I tell you what, as we'll hear in it, with all the changes and all, there's so many choices you have. It's, some of them are going to be great, maybe some of them aren't. So I think one of the criteria you have to have is, okay, what kind of people are you dealing with? And these guys are right up there. And it's interesting because you'll remember last week, and you'll see in the interview with Lars von der Hagen, one of the things about Belimo, it's their code with their people. If there's an issue with the Belimo product, it's drilled in to everybody in their company. If somebody's having a problem, it's your problem. You're going to solve it. And they really take pride in that. And they're empowered to do it. They're enabled to do it. They're not offloading tech support to anybody else. And that, to me, makes a huge difference. So sort of a long way around it, but I think it gets back to the core values of these type companies.
Well, I'll tell you, I think another thing too is the associations and the people that were there was an ecosystem. That probably emanates from Ken St. Clair and Tree Sullivan. We kept talking about the ecosystem that Apple had and how control manufacturers should take that as kind of a good wheel to look at and see how well that can run within your company is to continuously develop ecosystems where you have partners who take your product and make it into something that is their product, but they're using your core product as part of their application. So you're seeing all these wonderful apps coming up here, but you know, I think the sponsors played a big role, and it's a telltale sign of how successful an event is. The Linkspring Exchange partners and sponsors were DG Logic, Tritium, Viconics, Belimo, Connex Energy, KMC Controls, Connect Air, Eagle Technology, Lobos Yardi, J2 Innovations, M2M Integration, Sky Foundry, ACI, Functional Devices, Pinnacle, Varis Industries, and Verizon. And the reason why I take time to mention all of them is because that becomes an ecosystem. Some of those in the old days, that might have looked like competing entities. But how can you bring a competing entity into your Linkspring Exchange 2015 meeting with your most trusted customers and partners if there wasn't an opportunity to create co-opetition and enlarge the markets through integrations, through collaborations, you know? So Verizon being part of our industry, being part of this meeting, and all your accessory items, you know, your ACI, you know, all the good stuff they have, Functional Devices, Varis, because now if you want to get to that energy, if you want to get to those energy benchmarks, you're going to need meters, you're going to need all those accessory items that a company like Linkspring isn't going to manufacture, so they use partners. You have the best, you know, aggregators of information, the best presenters of information with SkySpark, with DG Logic, with J2 Innovations. And these are the top guys in the league. You know, there's nobody higher. There's no higher level. And then you've got Eagle Technology. They do stuff. They do that management, computerized maintenance management, which is kind of still it's a very important aspect of energy efficiency and operational technology and energy or operational energy operational efficiency is your CMMS. And these guys make one of the best ones. And our favorites, Connect Air. I mean,
oh, yes. Hi to Sarah Montaloni and Sean. They were there. No, Kenny, you're right. They were all there. I shot quite a few videos at the product show, so we'll have a lot of those. I did get a chance to catch up with Dennis and Arthur from DG Logic and their new product that they're rolling out, as well as Scott Mintz, J2 Innovation, John Petsy was there. So it was a veritable who's who, and you really nailed it, Kenny. I mean, the operative word is co-competition. And I think you got to really reach out and embrace your competitors and have them be your co-conspirators as well. So it's good stuff. Very, very well said, Ken. But the Linkspring Exchange, a big, big success. Compliments to Mark Petok and Terry Swope and the rest of the team at Linkspring. Anything else you want to say about that before we roll on?
No, Eric, we're going to transition to the next post.
Well, hang on. Before we do that, Kenny, you know, I'm going to go off script here just for a minute. You know, we get a lot of questions at Control Trends, and we love it. So we've come out with a new format, Kenny, as opposed to me and you answering them. If you want to drop, just record your question, or you can even write it if you want to, but if you record your question and just attach it to an email to controltrends@gmail.com and on the header put question, we'll actually play your question on the air, and then we will reach out and find a controls expert to answer your question. We have our first installment of it this week. We did get an audio recording from a gentleman named Bill out of Montana. So with that, Kenny, let's start with our question, and let's see if we can find a control expert to answer it. So here we go.
Hi, this is Bill from Montana. Why is the energy valve a good solution for a consulting engineer?
That's a great question, Bill from Montana. And Kenny, I reached out, and I found one Ricky Jones out of Relevant Solutions, Salt Lake City. Ricky's been around for a really, really long time. He's considered by many one of the best control minds in our industry. Rick has quite a bit of knowledge about the energy valve. So, Bill, here comes your answer from Rick Jones, Relevant Solutions.
Hey, Bill, that's a great question. Why is the energy valve a good solution for a consulting engineer? The main reason is because of the flow control, where you can set the energy valve to control for the BTUs required for the coil. That way you don't have to worry about pressure drops, you don't have to worry about GPMs. You set 0 to 100% of the signal for 0 to 100% of the BTUs, and the energy valve does all the rest.
Thank you very much, Ricky Jones. We appreciate that. Bill, thanks so much for the question. And again, if you have a controls question, just controltrends@gmail.com. Drop your audio file if you want to. Tell us where you're from, and we will locate a controls expert to answer the question for you. So thanks again, Rick. Thanks, Bill. All right, Kenny Smyers. That's pretty cool, right, huh? What do we have next, buddy?
Next post was, what is BACnet and why is it so important to smart buildings? And this is a great post, and it almost uses the same format because we turned to, actually, it was a post by you, and you say, well, let's take a look at it. To get a simple understanding, we turned to George Thomas and his team at Contemporary Controls. Contemporary Controls, of course, designs, manufactures the system building blocks for networking, integrating, and controlling automation processes. But that is one of the coolest academic sites we have in building management. These guys also give away a 40-page document on networking that includes this BACnet information, but it's a great video. And it starts out understanding BACnet part one. Briefly, what is BACnet? And it goes into an 8-video series that take you from A to Z on BACnet. So that's a great post. And they also, of course, you know, do all the other networks, the Ethernet, the ARCNet, Niagara Framework, Modbus, Sedona Framework, and all the other ones. So a great source of information, especially when you get into that highly technical stuff and you really need to know. You got a problem, you want to troubleshoot your network. That's a great site to go and get some technical support and some great guys out there. Contemporary Controls.
Right, really is. And, you know, Kenny, that's just the first of, I think they probably have 20 different videos on BACnet, so it's almost a complete BACnet video training class you can get. Plus, they have great training on other stuff too. ContemporaryControls.com, check them out. And George Thomas made the Hall of Fame last year at the Control Trends Awards. Kurt Clausen and the rest of the team do a great job. And these guys are global too, Kenny. They're all over the world, so be sure to check them out. What do we have up next, big dog?
Okay, Eric, our next post up is DOE's $9.5 million funding for small and medium commercial buildings. This is a great opportunity for our entrepreneurial spirits out there because this one's a little bit more along our sweet spot. A lot of stuff we don't have an opportunity because it's either too big or too small. But this one here is designed by the Building Technologies Office, the BTO, Commercial Buildings Integration Program has announced the availability of $9.5 million for funding opportunities. And there's actually a FOA number, and we have a link to it, that are solutions to improve energy efficiency of U.S. small in medium commercial buildings. The DOE seeks to fund 8 awards for the scale-up of promising solutions to the market barriers. And I thought that was key. I think that, I mean, what are the market barriers for people getting involved and trying to make their buildings more efficiency and taking advantage of funding? So this is a study on the solutions to market barriers that hinder the growth of energy efficiency in the small and medium building commercial sectors, which are less than 100,000 square feet in gross floor area and account for more than 50% of the energy used in the commercial sector. So this is a very important area to improve our energy's efficiencies. The government's throwing money at it. We need people to go out there, come up with solutions and make them cookie cutter. So if it works here, it works in Atlanta, Georgia, it works in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, it works out in Los Angeles. Everywhere we go, we need to get smarter, better, more efficient, and this is a great program to do it. So the objective of the funding is to build a path for market-ready solutions to be used at scale across the United States to improve building efficiency. So I always like to post programs are giving away money. I'm going to put it on the PA lottery next week. No, I'm just kidding. But this is a you got to pay to play. But I can't get why we're not getting more. Our economy is slow, and we as distributors and knowledge providers and technology providers, we can only go so far. We need an entrepreneurial spirit. We need owners to understand that there's money's available. If you're willing to go through the rigors of filling out paperwork and working with partners, you've got an opportunity to get some serious funding to make your buildings more energy efficient, help yourself, improve your profitability, reduce the carbon footprint, and everybody lives happily ever after.
No, I like that. Like that story, Kenny, especially the happily ever after, man. But you said something, I tell you, you know, we need to get smarter and wiser. And I tell you what, I don't know anybody in our industry that can help us do that more than our guest this week. So tell us a little about our guest.
Eric, I'd love to. Our guest today on Control Talk Now is Mr. Ken St. Clair, owner, editor, and founder of AutomatedBuildings.com. Welcome to the show, Ken.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Ken, man, it's great to have you. As you probably know, Kenny and I are big fans, and for our Control Trends audience, I mean, this is somebody you definitely want to pay attention to. He keeps up with the trends. He keeps up with the news. He keeps up with the industry. And two things I want to talk about right off the bat, Ken. First of all, a little recap of your October issue. Then I want to roll into your November issue. That's cool with you.
Great. Okay. Our October issue, we kind of headed off in a little different direction and talked about satisfaction and well-being equaling productivity. That started some interesting discussions on social media, which is helping me keep me a little bit relevant, as relevant as I guess I can be for an old guy. But it was interesting that it brought us into a whole different area of folks who have been looking at the productivity piece. And we had some challenges. We had some accolades, and it was a really interesting topic. And I was really pleased with a lot of our articles, and very pleased with the interaction on social media.
Well, Ken, that was really an interesting collection there. But satisfaction plus well-being equal productivity. When I read that, and I thought immediately to Comfy and Lindsay Baker and the folks out there in Silicon Valley, how they now used social media incorporated into a product that really relates, connects the people, gives that contextualization to each person. They get to say, I need heat, I want cooling, or I'm comfortable. But I thought that was a really interesting thing that social media played a part in the solution, because the people get to vote. And then when they do get a chance to vote, they're happier, so they produce more and probably are happier to come to work. And also they saved, the corollary effect was that there was a reduction of the fans running, and people didn't waste energy. So it was a double win.
Yeah, actually, I find it intriguing after being in the industry for five decades that we have new measured variables such as happiness, satisfaction, and well-being. This is really exciting stuff. And we've played around with this in the past, but we've never ever been able to quantify it. And the fact that there's a cell phone in everybody's pocket, and they can quickly do a vote, and we can have a dynamic input, is really exciting stuff. And I think it's going to unfold a lot of the future of automated buildings and connected buildings. And when I start chatting a little bit about our November issue, you'll see how that transition occurs.
Well, what do we say we just roll into the November issue, Ken? That hits when later today. And tell us a little bit about the November issue.
Okay. Basically, what I'm doing there is we're the connection collection is what we've called the theme. And it starts to move that it's not just this new discovered comfort and satisfaction and happiness kinds of factors. It's we're connecting to almost everything, and smart grid, transactive energy, and we have a great collection of articles. And I've got to thank our local utility, because they invited us all to a meeting, and they asked us to sit down with them and try and help lay out what a connected building is going to be over the next 10 years and what kinds of things it's going to touch. And I think they did a great job of capturing the spirit of the group that was there. And we have, they've let us publish that article with connections and basically a roadmap for connected buildings. And you'll see that the well-being piece becomes a significant piece in their interpretation of that. So very, very pleased with that. Very pleased with an article from NIST, Dave Holmberg, who's basically talking about how we're going to have to modify our buildings to interact with the grid a lot more than we are now. And this whole concept of a transactive energy is getting portrayed. He's got some great resources there that I think we need to take a look at.
Well, Ken, I really enjoy the fact that you pick a theme out each month. I really think that just it's a great organizing, you know, for the benefit of the industry. When you go to look for something, you can actually go down by an index by the themes and then have related articles. One of the things that Eric and I bumped into, we traveled around. We were in Global EZIO's or EZIO's Global Partnership in Paris, and then Eric and I traveled through North America here recently, and we're seeing like kind of like an idea that we're in a renaissance period. We're right now with the IoT, as you had mentioned several times in your previous, I think it was the August one or maybe September where you featured IoT. Do you think we're at a tipping point? Do you think we're actually getting to a point where we're business as usual for 20, 25 years is changing and we're going to kind of like leap into another, is there a tipping point? Is there such a thing in our industry, you think?
Very good question. And I do agree that, yes, we're in a radical, a time of radical change. Just even back to where you started with, you were pleased with me picking a theme. I never pick a theme. The theme falls on top of me. It basically, the theme is always set by the summation of articles that fall in the bin. And quite often I get requests to see my editorial calendar, and I don't have an editorial calendar because I have no idea what I'm going to talk about. Often an article that falls in the early part of the week within days of going online actually sets the tone of the issue. So it's very dynamic, very fluid times. And you and I were talking before the interview about what is keeping the industry so busy. And I loved your description, saying that there's sort of half of the people are in build mode and the other half of the people are in recovery mode, asking what happened. So, yes, very interesting times.
I think, Ken, to me, and you've been in the industry a little bit longer than Kenny and I have, and to me, it really does seem like things are ramping up very, very quickly at a pace that I haven't seen. The technologies are changing so rapidly. And it seems like that speed and nimbleness and the ability to adapt quickly is maybe what's going to win in the end in terms of technologies we're seeing. Fair statement, some of the bigger ones, bigger companies, I mean, I think are always going to be reliable and always going to be there. But it sure seems like we've seen this marketplace open up for some of the smaller companies like KMC, EZIO, Delta Controls, and then obviously a whole plethora of players doing data analytics. You agree with that assessment? And sort of what are you seeing regarding that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I do agree with that. And what's happening as well is we're not moving at the speed of HVAC. We're moving at the speed of IoT. And this is like a new speed for us. It's like another dimension, warp 5 for sure. And for the existing companies, I think the only solution for them to moving forward is to actually buy startups. And these startups seem to be able to put together amazing products that do amazing things and connect to things that we hadn't even imagined connecting to. So it's radical change, full speed ahead.
Well, not only that, Ken, it seems like, I'm sorry, Kenny. It seems like, you and I and Therese Sullivan and Kenny all showed up at RealCon IBACON 2 years ago. And we're sort of blown away by the players that were there. I mean, Intel was there, Cisco was there, Dell was there, and Apple and Google. Maybe they've always been there, but huge presence, huge splash. As a matter of fact, I think you and I co-hosted a breakout session where the guy at Intel got up and pretty much shook the room to pieces with this sort of declaration that the chips were already in the equipment and they were going to be able to do a job. And a tenth of the time because they already had the cybersecurity piece worked out. And, the question I have is that sort of blew me away. Everybody was coming great gangbusters. And then at the last one, they were still there, but it was kind of a softer, gentler sort of message, if you will, that we're all going to work together. What do you think happened there?
I'm not sure, but I could probably be better to answer that question next month because I'm off to Cortec, Santa Clara, and there's there's a bunch of tours. There's a tour of the Google campus. There's a tour of Stanford University. And there's a tour of the Levi Stadium. And part of the first day is actually in the Intel offices. So I'm kind of guessing that we might get kind of an inkling of what Intel is thinking. And the program looks really neat. I was very intrigued by almost everything that was going on there. So I'm looking forward at trying to get updated on all of that. So I think I too understand that it seems like a better cooperation. And the fact that all of those people are talking, actually one of the sessions I'm going to is, I don't have the exact title, but the gist of it is are we really ready for all of this? And the speakers are Daryl Smith from Microsoft, Dan, I've got his last name, from Google, and Paul from CBR, a.k.a. ESI for us old guys. But I can't wait to hear what those guys have to say about the transition. And I respect all of them. And I think I'll have some useful information. And I'm hoping to try and capture some of that in words for December.
You're saying that, but, you know, here we are, like, they're showing the sponsors and they're showing, I mean, whoever would have thought in the HVAC and building management, and even though Real Common Core Tech, you know, this is HVAC per se is not the reason why they have the show. They have it because they want the voice of their customers, the real estate agents, the GSAs, and the gigantic customers are telling us that our speak to them was not the same language they wanted to hear. We're trying to fit square pegs into round circles, you know, and it just didn't work. But now we're seeing Intel and Google, Dell, they keep popping up at the places where it used to be the building manufacturers or the control manufacturers used to have a place there. And it seems as though that within 2 years, 3 years, we've seen these gigantic corporations now come in and have kind of taken the highest, you know, the highest echelon of an industry, of our industry. And now we're going to see them kind of, and I think these shows kind of give us the prelude to it or the precursors of their activity in our markets or in our you know, our sweet spots. So what do you think, like, the roles of these Dell, Intel, Google? And a safe answer, I mean, is it a positive thing? I mean, they're forcing the IoT hand on us whether we want to play or not. They're going to introduce these technologies. And do you think that that's well, I guess it's two questions, but number one, comment on their presence and how quickly they've permeated our industry. And two, do you think that's kind of been that's the driver, the force that's making us all take IoT very, very seriously and incorporate it into our daily lives?
Yeah, I think there's no way around it. I mean, because they've forced their way into our personal lives. I mean, all the things we do with our phone that we didn't do before and didn't even know we could do before, and all of the cloud relationships that we all have that we never imagined we would have. And so that's just falling on our industry. And I think it's good. The scale is there. They basically have forged new interface standards. If you've been in the industry a long time, we used to actually have to try and do our own graphical interfaces and stuff, but that just doesn't happen anymore. Now it just evolves and we use whatever the standard IT of the day is. And also the social media giants are so large that if we can take any of our applications and make them part of that, that's the way to do it. But of course, the business of taking our business and making it part of their business is the new business. And that's really what's dividing the industry, is the people who have grasped that and are figuring out how do we leverage this incredible resource. Then they're busy as heck and they're hiring, and the people are saying, that IoT stuff's not going to catch on. They may be maybe losing some of their key people, or some of their key people may not even be all that useful, because if they don't realize that change is happening. Actually, I've got a great article in this month's issue called The Perfect Storm. And it's written by Switch Automation, an Australian company. And they're doing some incredibly neat stuff. And how quickly they've put together some of their systems is kind of amazing, too. So they're in basically data analytics.
Wow. Great answer.
Yeah, Ken, it does sure seem like we're becoming global with this controls thing. As you know, Kenny and I went to EZIO's global event for the second time, and it's amazing when you talk to systems integrators and manufacturers around the world. It seems like a lot of them are really synergizing their global offerings. I know a lot of the big companies, you know, have had different divisions and have been global for many years, but that seems to be a trend we're seeing, is that the world seems to be shrinking a bit.
Yeah, it does. And the other interesting thing we're seeing is international policy is starting to affect our industry. Probably one of the biggest reasons that Australia is such a powerhouse in data analytics is several years ago, Australia chose to make all building owners expose their energy data and make that very visible and make it visible to the public. This, of course, required that they put together some of these systems. So they were actually early to market with some of that stuff. And they've got some great solutions already that are tried and true. So all of a sudden, then because of the global market, you take something like that and you apply it on North American market. Switch Automation has a big presence in the Seattle area, where they've basically tied the city of Seattle together. And so a lot of that stuff just is very portable and can be very quickly applied. IT standards are global, and there's none of this BACnet KNX stuff. It's basically we're all using the same standards, TCP, IP, and Wi-Fi, and although there's some interesting stuff happening in that area too, but it's another story.
Well, real quick, Ken, how's our girl Therese Sullivan doing? She had a really nice article in the October issue, navigating the new landscape. She got anything in your November issue?
Oh yeah. of pitchforks and haystacks. Great article.
Nice.
It's what else would you have for Halloween?
Yeah.
And I read you the book quote. It says, "So now I've been an observer of this market long enough to see hype become reality. I bet some of the changes to who and when and how." So, she actually talks a whole bunch about a fun part of our industry, which is the hype cycle. And I think it's actually a great to ask that question, because I think Kenny was alluding to that, is he didn't ask the question, but he really wanted to ask how much of this is hype and how much of this is reality. And I think that's the question he really wanted to ask. So I'll flounder into it. So we're seeing, because it's easy in an IT world, an IFT world, to put together a website, a presence, grab a few customers, and put together a pretty formidable looking product. And it's very difficult to separate that from a product that has 10, 15 years of maturity. So we're all in the business of trying to sort out, is this hype or is this reality? And also Jim Young keeps referring to that in the almost 200 solutions that are out there. They're not sustainable, and we have to basically sort out some of that stuff. And in our theme for November, we're chatting a little bit about that, in trying to just list some of our connection collection. And probably the biggest value we all provide as professionals in the industry is to try and understand which of these connections are real and which are the ones that will probably be here in the next 10 to 15 years. That's going to be a tough call because of how rapidly they're unfolding. I mean, it's just totally amazing to try and get your mind around. Like we have this situation that some of these social media identities have unrolled in like 6 months or a year, and they have an effect on our industry and everybody's industry. And now you have to kind of, if somebody starts building a product based on one of these, you have to kind of get your mind around. We're talking to people in our industry that, you know, don't even understand what that's about. We're fiddling around this month with, we built as well as our traditional automated buildings, HTML 0.0, which I always joke about because we've never moved since the original website. And so we have this old dinosaur HTML that pushes the site, and I'm kind of proud that it still works. But we're trying to look at how can we get a little bit of a facelift. And one of our ideas is we're going to try this Pinterest, which is a social media thing where you pin your interest, and you basically, when you're on a page, you just click on it and it grabs that page and the information and puts it on a bulletin board, a virtual bulletin board. And so we're starting to fiddle with that. And what I did is I just built the whole menu for the November issue out of it. So I'm interested to see what the industry thinks of that. And I think I'm going to do a lot of that, just trying to lead the industry to look at some of this stuff. The investment is so low for all of us that we can take a look at it, we can use it, make the mistake, and throw it away.
That's good stuff, Ken. Well, listen, I want to cycle back around to, I think it's a great point, and a lot of our viewers on Control Trends and Control Talk now are end users as well as systems integrators as well as consulting engineers. But when you talk about, I think it's a very, very valid point, all this technology coming in, and, you know, who's going to be around, who's not. My question for you is, who's responsible for calling BS on somebody if they don't have a product? Or do you think the industry will just sort of sift that out on its own?
Well, I think that's where the wisdom of the traditionals is going to prevail. And I think that's our new industry. As I said in the issue here, the biggest service we have to provide going ahead as an industry is to be able to define the possible and the probable, and maybe even turn the possible into the probable. And if we think like 20, 30-year-old controls integrators or DDC folks, we're probably in a dangerous spot if we're trying to get our head around what's happening in the IoT industry and how that's falling and how that's meshing with our industry. Then I think we can add value because we can quickly see that, yeah, that's not going to work. You can't control a 500-ton chiller from a web or a cell phone, but yeah, that's not a good idea. That's not a good idea. But actually, but being able to get at the analytics for that and having the new chiller come with a Wi-Fi, or actually more likely a cell connection, that as soon as it's powered on, it jumps up and calls home and says, "I'm ready." And they can actually see it start up, see the conditions that, there's no chill, there's no condensing water, shut it down, or they will in fact shut it down with the algorithms. And so some of the stuff that's available, if you can't get your mind around what's happening there, I think it's kind of a dangerous spot. So I think for us as an industry is, actually I wrote something I can't It talked about anyway that if so old dinosaurs are going to roar, we've got to find the voice of the future here. We got to find the voice of whatever the young kids that are making this all happen. And I also redefine young kids as anybody under 50 in my world.
Well, Ken, I tell you what, we could talk all day.
Well, let me
Kenny, you got a question, right?
Ken, you were saying about the there were two things that you brought up that I wanted to kind of talk about. Is one is where you're getting your information from, the sources of information, the filtering, you know, the pivot points or the portals. You know, I think what you're doing right now is you're helping us understand that there's so much information out there. How do you sort it into intelligent, important information? That's the first point. And the secondly is the standards. Imagine if we get so good with IoT that we actually create a kind of a another problem, that a consequence we weren't prepared to deal with, and that is that we use IoT to the point, and all this new technology to the point that we get rid of all the old ways of doing things and all the backups and safeguards, so that once IoT would ever shut down or have a virus in it or have, God forbid, cybersecurity issues, if you don't have minimum safeguards, I mean, the one thing I remember about the Air Force, and we used to have these inspections, and everything would go good until they cut the base power, then they cut the generators, and then they cut all communications. And you had to keep dealing with the attrition. And I don't mean that like corporate America or corporate world's going to have to deal with attrition. I mean, things happen, hurricanes, bad storms. I think that there's got to be some kind of a like minimum local level, always maintained, so that there's an assumption if you don't have, best case situation or scenarios with IoT, you've got standalone systems that can deal with issues that they're not designed to deal with. I mean, that they're designed to deal with at the most basic level. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think Toby Considine, he is one of our columnists, and he wrote a great article to that, and he's talking, I think the title says, Resource Frameworks to Integrate the IoT. And there's a whole bunch of things going on. First of all, the big thing is that's the value, as old horses add to the to this stampede, is to say, whoa, you can't do that. You're going to absolutely break that. Or what are you going to do when the internet isn't there? All of those things have to be dealt with. That's how come we're all going to be here 20 years from now. Well, maybe not physically, but you know what I mean. So anyway, what the other thing that's happening in the IoT world is they're talking about is everything pushed out to the edge. So where we kind of went through this thing where everything was pushed into the cloud. Yeah, okay. So everything's getting pushed out to the edge, and with a lot of relationships. For example, turning on a light is only a relationship between your phone and the light bulb. And that's getting interesting too, because the hardware is virtually disappearing. So it's getting pushed out to the edge. And we had it going that we, before that kind of a situation went into the cloud and came back out of the cloud. And we're starting to see a whole other evolution occurring there. So I think some of that stuff is being addressed, that it's not going to have a strong web relationship or internet. IFT, the IFT is the internet, is the loop are getting closer, although that starts to affect some of the devices that we might sell. But again, as an industry, what our value is to try and determine what of that is worthwhile and the direction we should be moving.
Very good. Thank you.
Very good. Well, listen, Ken, we could talk to you all day, man. Really do appreciate you taking some time to talk to us and our audience. It's Ken Sinclair, automatedbuildings.com. Be sure to check out the November issue at automatedbuildings.com. Ken, hopefully we'll get you back next week or next month for the December issue. And Ken will be at the 2015 Control Trends Awards in Orlando, probably giving an award out. And Ken, can't tell you how much we appreciate you.
Great. I like all the work that Control Trends is doing. You guys are really starting to get some global impact, and I think that's great too. It's interesting that you kind of start this thing as we started Automated Buildings, thinking we understood what it was all about, but then other people start interacting with it. I'm kind of, this month again, we've got a bunch of articles from folks around the world, which is really neat.
Very cool. Ken Sinclair, automatedbuildings.com. Check him out. All right, Kenny Smyers, with that, we're going to call it a week. So a special thanks to our guest, Ken Sinclair from automatedbuildings.com. Be sure to check him out. And, of course, the ever-athletic Scott Cross. Really cool video, Scott. Technical controls out of Dallas, Texas. Special thanks to Rick Jones from Relevant Systems for answering our controls question of the week. And with that, Kenny Smyers, I'm going to wish you a great week, big dog. Remember, stay in control. Indeed, Kenny Smyers. I think that's it.